Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Will it hurt? 6-year-old Casey whimpered, his lower lip trembling. Nah, sport, his dad said, ruffling Casey's hair. Anyway, you can handle it. Casey's eyes grew wide as he looked up at his dad from his gurney. Mikey said when he had it, it hurt like anything. Well, sometimes your brother exaggerates a bit, his dad smiled. Older brothers like to do that, you know. Casey began to whimper again. But Mikey said his throat was awful. Big tears began to form in his eyes. I don't want my throat to hurt. I want to go home. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about preparing children for surgery? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest today can speak as a true expert on children being prepared for surgery. Dr. Susan Verghese is a pediatric anesthesiologist. She's professor of anesthesiology and pediatrics at George Washington University Medical Center and former director of pediatric cardiac anesthesia at the Division of Anesthesia at Children's National Medical Center in Washington, D.C. She's been at Children's for 30 years. She's also the mother of 2 young men, one of whom faced a serious illness when he was just 6 years old. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Verghese.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
What would you say is the biggest misconception parents have about childhood surgery?
The biggest misconception probably is relating to the amount of anesthesia the patient will be getting. Most parents ask this question, will my child get as much anesthesia as an adult would get? Will he get too much? Will he feel any pain? All the other general questions that adult patients ask would follow after this first question.
And what's the answer?
The answer is it is tailored to the needs of a child, and the pediatric anesthesiologists are specialized in knowing exactly how much anesthetic is required for that particular surgery to obliterate pain and to make the patient comfortable, completely unaware of the operation, and yet be able to wake the patient up properly at the end of the surgery.
Does it depend on the patient's age or weight or both?
It depends on the patient's age, weight, as well as the operation, the needs of the operation. For example, if you have a little mole removed from your leg, it may need very small depth of anesthesia or not too deep a depth of anesthesia. But if you have the surgeon trying to get something out of your abdominal cavity, it needs a deeper depth of anesthesia. So it varies according to the type of surgery.
When parents are at home and thinking about the child having surgery and trying to prepare the child, what's the most important thing they should remember?
I think the most important thing that the parent has to remember is this is a procedure that is necessary for the child, and they have a role to play, a very important role that, if taken seriously and done well, can be tremendously beneficial to the child, and that they have a say in how the child is going to undergo the anesthetic induction, and they have a lot of information that's available to them, so they are not completely without help.
Would you give some general guidelines to follow when preparing a child for surgery?
I would have the ability for the parent to call the anesthesiologist the day before, but that's a little too late. You can actually prepare at the time when the surgery is scheduled in your surgeon's office. Right from there, you can prepare your child. Reading up about it, going to websites and trying to get information. And then when it comes more to that day of surgery, the night before or the evening before, calling your anesthesiologist, specifically asking questions as to the induction, all that would be very helpful.
Do children ever see hospital facilities, surgical facilities prior to their day of surgery?
It depends on different anesthesia divisions or departments all across the country, but this ability to see an induction room, the procedure rooms, and where they can interact with masks, IV tubings, inhalational induction is a way that most children go to sleep, how to have air going through the mask and how they can blow up the balloon and play with that. That's certainly available in most institutions. We used to have puppet shows in a form of an entertainment. The child could actually see how puppets speaking to each other about the upcoming surgery and what to expect. So in some way or the other, at the child's level, making the child understand that induction of anesthesia is painless, it's fun, and it's done in the presence of the parents, all those things can be seen ahead of time. Most parents who are interested in having this child face this ahead of time bring these children on the Sunday or Saturday before, and they could come and actually participate in this tour of the facilities. If there is a puppet show or a video presentation, they can see it and make sure that the whole family is into it.
Is this only generally happening in hospitals that cater to children?
Mostly it is in pediatric facilities that I know of.
When we were talking earlier before the show, you were saying, now if you were CEO of a hospital, here's how you would figure out how to do things. Would you like to share that with us?
I would think that there should be a way to have more people involved with parental preparation right from the start. As the person who makes the decision, which is usually a surgeon, telling the parent, your child needs this surgery. At that time, there should be someone in the surgeon's office who can take them aside from that step one to explaining to the parent what are the facilities provisions, that we have a tour, we have a puppet show, we have a video, and these are held on these days. But the most important thing is to prepare yourself. And that is the first thing. And it could be a psychologist, it could be an RN trained in psychology, but to say that you have to remain very calm. From the time you leave here till the operation, your child is going to watch you. And children are very adept at finding your anxiety level and copying that. And that's the start. For example, if a mother goes to pieces the moment the surgeon says, I don't think we can do it in any other way but to have surgery done on Johnny, and she starts weeping, and Johnny, who has been playing with his little car, looks up and sees mom crying, he knows, uh-oh, there's something really wrong here. And if mom were to be told ahead of time, now be very, very strong and don't show Johnny this is bad, then it's different. If Johnny was out of sight and he didn't see that, that's different. The same way going home and thinking that no one is around, calling the pastor or the rabbi or the guru of the temple and speaking to them and saying, please pray for me. He's going to go under surgery. I'm so scared. Or calling your father and mother and weeping on the phone. You may be a fantastic parent, but having done that in front of your child has really set him to fear it. That extra hug, that extra squeeze and saying, I don't know. And then the countdown, 10 days, 9 days, 8 days. It's almost as if something terrible is going to happen. That shouldn't happen. Having enough help, and then all of this requires time. So certain people assigned just to take care of educating the parent about how to go about it. That's important. It takes time, money, and a lot of energy. But this preparation has to be done very well. A lot of stuff that we carry across is in the form of stories. Everybody loves a story, whether you're a child or adult. And the story is about this young woman who, when she was a young child, 4 or 5 years of age, she used to play around with another child. And the other child went for surgery and never came back. She died.
Oh my gosh.
Mother was so upset with this particular incident in her life. When her child needed surgery, it was an absolutely simple procedure, she went to pieces. Obviously, she came to the right person, asked for help, spoke to an anesthesiologist at length. But still, when the time came for the mother to actually be with the child, she was shedding tears. She couldn't help herself. I asked myself, what could we have done differently? Could we premedicate the mother? Or maybe you could postpone the surgery and say, look, it's very, very important. Face-to-face conversation with the mother. You have been traumatized by something that happened to your friend. But to imagine the same thing happening to your child, it's distressing to you. How can you get rid of that? She needs to undergo some kind of therapy if she has to be a valuable asset to her child during the time of induction. And by the time I finished induction, I thought this mother was not prepared well for surgery because she kept on crying. The child was absolutely fine, and the father was around. But as soon as the mother came in and she hugged the child and cried, the child would start crying. So these are some examples of how to pick up ahead of time, how you can reach the mother, make sure that she's okay. And when I mentioned to her that it's very important that during induction that you remain calm, put that story aside. It's easier said than done, I know. Mm-hmm. But for your child, you need to do it. After she's asleep, cry as much as you want. But that's the thing that you have to do at this point. If you want to be helpful, you really have to grit your teeth and say, it's not going to happen to my child. One mother told me that my child becomes very calm when she holds on to her grandmother's velvet blanket or whatever. So I had some velvet in my room, and I brought the velvet piece of cloth and gave it to her in her hand. She held on to it. It was like a magic blanket. She rubbed it between her hands, and she was absolutely calm from that. But that helped because the mother giving me that hint that this grandmother's velvet always calmed her for some reason. And that I could reproduce. So these kind of little hints the parents can give you. My child gets very calm with music. Or my child has some disability or has autism and he doesn't like anyone touching the face. If you get that information, don't go near the face with a mask. Maybe you can induce in another way. You know, those kind of information is very, very helpful.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on preparing a child for surgery.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Susan Verghese about preparing a child for surgery.
How is the preparation different when the procedure is an emergency, perhaps even a life-threatening emergency?
It's totally different because you don't have the luxury of explaining anything much to the parent. For those situations, there's usually another person other than the anesthesiologist who is on call at night and who suddenly is faced with somebody who has got a coin in the trachea or an esophagus, and you're trying to take the child to surgery, there is usually another person who can explain to the parent what's going to happen. But child safety is primarily important, and that's the first thing we take care of. And then someone may come out and speak to the parent. So the preparation, there isn't much time.
How is preparing a teenager different?
Teenagers have different fears compared to toddlers and a school-age kid because teenagers fear that if they go to sleep, they may not wake up at all. That's one. Two, that they may go to sleep and wake up in the middle of surgery. And lastly, that they will wake up at the end and they will be in severe pain. Now, these three things are similar to what adults feel, too. Certain words like if they've seen their pet put to sleep and you are going to use the same term, I'm going to be the person who's going to put you to sleep. It's not something that should be repeated. So it's very interesting, the choice of words that you can't use. Preparing a teenager would take a little more time. Most teenagers do not want to discuss. They don't want to sound scared or wimpy about it. So they don't want to discuss this with their parents. So it needs a little more effort on your part to really take them aside and say, it's okay to be scared. Tell me, I'm here to help you. I want you to tell me all your fears about it. If you're afraid of pain, I'll take care of pain. If you're afraid of waking up, that's my job. I'll make sure you're completely asleep. If you're afraid of waking up nauseous, I have medicines to take care of that. If you're afraid of losing control, I'm going to be there throughout. There's nothing that's going to be done while you're awake. So just going through the steps, taking time, even if they shed a tear, not to say things like, oh, don't be a baby. No, you say it's okay to cry. And I usually use my kids' examples that my teenager would be as scared as you. So there's perfectly no reason why you should be ashamed of it. And if you feel like crying, go ahead and cry. Feel better. But you don't have to be afraid of this, this, and this. And explain to them, you know, if you need some pre-medication to make you feel comfortable, we have that medicine to make you feel comfortable. And don't be afraid. That's the most important thing. Trust us to do our best. And many kids come through this and they go without any of these things. And they have similar fears. So just reassuring them. And asking them questions about what they like, distracting them, even though they are older children, with their favorite sports games or the movies they have seen recently, just taking them away from the actual anxiety-provoking situation. And being a friend, distracting them, all these things can be of help.
What about the post-op period? How do you deal with that with the different age groups we've been discussing?
Kids who have separation anxieties, like toddlers, they really don't want to be separated from their parent. And parents are naturally, because of that, extremely anxious. So if you were to tell the child's parents that as soon as the child wakes up, we will make sure that you both are next to him. So the first person he sees is the parent. Then that would decrease that patient's anxiety as well as the parent's anxiety. That's something you can do. If there is a reason why the parent should not be there because you need to take care of the pain or the nausea or for the patient's safety, then you can do certain things like giving drugs to calm them down so they are not fully aware of their surroundings. In other words, continuing a certain amount of sedation in the post-op period. That may be necessary. Some kids may not understand the situation and want to have their IVs pull out every monitor, and sedation may be required for that too. The older children, if you explain to them, are you in pain? And they can answer and say, no, I'm not in pain, but I'm a little nauseous. You can give medicines to treat that.
What about children that have to have repeated surgeries, that have long-term problems?
Repeated surgeries is really a problem in a child's life. It disrupts his or her natural school and interaction with her peers. And this constant coming back to surgery is almost tragic for the family and for the child. But most parents who are well aware of this and have dealt with it well themselves can prepare the child, saying that this is one more step and this is to make you feel better and we will be there. And they can get the positive out of the previous experience and also reiterate that we will be there at the end of the surgery. You know the routine. You're an expert now. You don't have to fear all the things that you feared at the first time. So they are a little more aware of what to expect. If there is psychological issues, it is very helpful for the child to be seen by a psychiatrist. If the parents have problems, they could see a psychiatrist to deal with their anxiety and their frustrations about it. For example, if there are burns and contractures and the parent is feeling very guilty about how it happened, cannot cope, cannot help the child, angry, and the child is in pain and has to come repeatedly for dressing changes and procedures, then depending on the age of the child, you can intervene. If it is a teenager, you can get the psychiatrist to speak to them on a regular basis, to the parent especially, because if they are not helped, they can't be of help to the child.
Is this the kind of thing where very often you need to treat the whole family?
Sometimes it is, especially in a long-term relationship with the providers. For example, as I mentioned, the burn patients who has to come repeatedly, and even later, the burn-induced contractures of the hand and foot needs plastic surgery. So it's a long-term commitment. Those patients, definitely, it's the whole family that needs to be treated.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on preparing a child for surgery.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Susan Verghese about preparing a child for surgery. When a child needs repeated surgeries, is that usually handled with the same doctors?
Depending on the surgical specialty, it may be a different surgeon.
How about the same anesthesiologist?
They can request, but because of call schedules and problems with availability, it may not be possible to have the same anesthesiologist. Some parents would connect with a certain anesthesiologist and would say, would you be able to tell us if you would be on call or would you be able to take care of the child? So sometimes they do accommodate if it is possible. But by and large, almost all the pediatric anesthesiologists are aware of what they should be doing to these particular children because they do read the previous anesthetic records if they have a particular fear of the mask, do not want mask anywhere near them. So they won't induce the patient with a mask at all if they have that fear. So certain things that patients tend to wake up very wild at the end of the operation. So they would prepare the child so that he will have some kind of sedation at the end so he won't be thrashing around and getting wild. So reading the notes ahead of time, which we all do before we anesthetize, gives us a real good picture of how we need to approach each child at each situation.
Earlier when we introduced you, we mentioned that you had been through a serious illness with one of your children when he was 6 years old. Would you elaborate on that a little bit?
I call it my crucible of faith, of testing. I was a new mother. My second baby was just a few weeks old. And my older son, who was 6 years old, was diagnosed with meningitis. And my husband was left the role of being the mother for the baby.
Oh,
and the baby did not see me for at least a month or so while I spent time with my older son, taking care of him. It was difficult to see a six-year-old, and my older one is a very well-behaved young man. But when it came to having a spinal tap to lie down without sedation, me holding him and having a spinal, all those are heartrending for a mother. And that experience taught me how difficult it is to be a parent and see your child suffer. I don't think there is any other suffering more than a parent seeing the child in pain or suffering. Because I would gladly take all his pain, but I couldn't. And most of us as parents know what it feels like. So I went through a difficult time during his admission while he was, I wouldn't say tortured, but had things done which were painful, and I could not help him.
You said a very interesting thing. You said now you realize when parents have very anxious behavior that it might seem like they're directing anger to the physician, but it's really internal anger because they're so distressed that their child is in
pain,
a serious situation.
You're absolutely right. I think I understood what it is to feel impotent, not being able to help, having a lot of pain and anger and frustration, not being able to do anything about it. And I realized that I could easily lash out at the nurse who came to change the bedpan. She had nothing to do with it, but she was one person who was a part of this group of people who were inflicting pain on my child. And I know it was necessary. But as a physician, at that time, I was a parent, and I realized what it means to be on the other side. To me, that experience actually was a blessing in disguise because it taught me to be a better physician.
Well, before we go, are there resources that you would suggest for our listeners who want to pursue further some of these issues we've been discussing?
The best thing would be to actually speak to the anesthesiologist. And that would mean just a phone call to say, what can I expect? If you want to find out about the anesthesiologists that are in your institution, most institutions now have their pictures, their credentials, everything in their website. So you would even know everything about your anesthesiologist. I think they have this new one called the Anesthesia Lifeline, www.lifelinetomodernmedicine.com. And there are several tips to help parents prepare children for surgery in that.
Well, this has been a very informative and valuable discussion. So, Dr. Susan Verghese, thank you so much for being with us today to talk about preparing children for surgery.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of The Little Book, a collection of stories and articles presenting parenting tips and resources for all parents and caregivers. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 434, and tell us if you can what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from our listeners. Our sound engineer is Elizabeth Buckle. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.